NBA playoff opening weekend. It's here. It's been great. 48 hours of nonstop craziness, and we're going to break it all down to you next.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue
or Thursday
Chris
for the NFL
will be
draft.
In the house every week, smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island.
We're also brought to you by the Four Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Catch every week, every Sunday, new episodes of Card Subject to Change. Our boys, Chris, or CZ, Nick Bull, and company this week, they had a good old friend of mine, James Thomas, came on. They recorded that episode here this evening, Sunday. It was awesome. Shout out to those guys. Check them out every single Sunday. We will have more from them later, promoting how to get in touch with them to sponsor their show. Also, follow us on TikTok at For Fantasy Sake QC. We are starting to pop off on there. A huge shout out to the people listening and watching that. Those we've done, you know, just throwing up some videos or some clips. We've got two videos over 2,200 views. A third one over 1,800. Still got it. We're going to drop the playoff eulogy for the Thunder tomorrow on there when I have the time. I've just been kind of busy. I was real tired Friday night and yesterday. Just kind of didn't want to do any content stuff. And today I've been out and about all day and hanging out and watching games and stuff. So we'll do that at the Thunder tomorrow. But today, coming up on this pod, the first 48 hours, the first 48, as they say, of playoff weekend. And boy, oh boy, did it absolutely, it did not disappoint at all. We're going to talk, we are going to start with probably Lakers Grizzlies and Clippers Suns. We are going to then move to Kings Warriors. Those are the three best games of the weekend. Then get to some Cavs Knicks and then kind of break down some of the other games here or there. Throughout the weekend, and the majority of them were pretty good. Celtics dominated, but regardless, it was a fun week. A couple days of basketball and a lot of interesting outcomes in the first few days. Reminder for the week ahead, Wednesday evening is going to be our next show. We're going to go live Wednesday at about 7 or 8 p.m. Central. We'll put about out on the socials the closer we get. But it is going to be myself, Nick Pearson, Mac Fulton, Blake Ringer. It is going to be the second annual Educated Ignorance Mock Draft. We have it all set up. We've got a new format this year that I think you guys are really going to like, and we are going to be live for that Wednesday night about 8 o'clock Central Time. Cannot wait. It's going to be a blast. And then we will probably have a new Educated Ignorance show Friday. That will probably be the next show we do. So we'll record Thursday night. We'll see. There's a chance it could record Tuesday night. Kings Warriors game two will be fun. And I guess Clippers Suns was Tuesday night game two. So those are not that these other games aren't worth talking about, but like tomorrow night, the first game. Shout out to the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup first round for starting tomorrow, because that's going to probably get the main screen during the beginning of the night. well, I guess Tuesday, I'm trying to see, just for shits and giggles. Tuesday, Hawks, Celtics, Knicks, Cavs. Yeah, that'll probably get the small screen during the Leafs game. Monday, you know, Nets, Sixers, then Warriors, Kings, that'll be good. Knicks, Cavs, though, and Clippers, Suns will be fun. Wednesday is a little unfortunate that we're going to be doing the timing because Heat Bucks, which is interesting right now, and Lakers Grizzlies game two is great. So regardless, we're going to record the draft show Thursday or Wednesday, our mock draft. That'll be right here live. It'll be on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and also next Thursday, So a week from this Thursday, so what, 7, 8, 9, 10 days from now when this comes out, we will be live at Kavanaugh's for the second straight year, the for frequency sake, for fantasy sake, educated ignorance, live NFL draft show. Myself and DJ Jarvis will be there to host. We're going to have guests throughout the night. Cannot wait. We've also got some cool promotional stuff. We're doing a grill giveaway. We haven't really promoted that yet, but that's on the cards at least. So, whoops. But yeah, that's why you are going to hear some. I know the Kavanaugh's promotion is a little outdated, but that's why you're going to hear some Kavanaugh stuff over the next week or two, is because we're going there live again. We're going to be there next Thursday for round one of the NFL draft. I cannot wait. All right. With all that said, let's get to it. We're recording this at 11:50 in the north. It is the end of the third quarter. It's the early of the fourth quarter. The Nuggets are up 31. Shout out to Denver for putting that game away so we could get busy here. What a weekend it was. We're going to start with Lakers-Grizzlies because that was, I think, the most newsworthy game of the day. And I've got some notes here for the majority of these games, but it was a game for the Grizzlies that I felt like they had to get. I felt like they had to find a way to pull one out in game one. But if I will say this, a difference in like this game compared to a normal LeBron game one, at least to a degree. And now I'm going to actually kind of float through this a bit here, and I might not make sense, but stay with me. We're going to land the plane. Usually LeBron game ones, he's not really aggressive and the team doesn't really show up much and they kind of feel it out. And then from there they roll. He's lost every game one he's played with the Lake. Well, no, that's false. He's lost three of the five game ones he's played with the Lakers going into this season. They lost game one to the 8-seed Blazers. They lost game one to the Rockets. And then they won game one against Miami and Denver. Then they lost game one against Phoenix in 2021. Of course, not making it last year. They got up 10 in the first half. LeBron wasn't really aggressive, but he was the difference between this team and you look at like the Cavs teams, the 2016, 2017, 2018, even the 2015 Cavs, I guess, you know, think of his game one losses. So the real one that sticks out is 2018. Obviously he loses game one to Indiana. They go down 0-2 against Boston. You know, those games were feel out process, right? You know, so you look at some of those, like maybe the team's not as good, and it's a little bit of a 50-50 on that. But he's not aggressive, but you're able to pull that off when you have Davis, who has an amazing game, and the defense plays well, and the offense can go from not hitting shots in the first half to getting shots to fall in the second half. And of course, we're going to talk about them. Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura were fantastic this afternoon for the Lakers. The game in the first half was the Lakers were beating the piss out of Memphis on the offensive glass. But, you know, they were able to get away. They were able to stretch the lead out to double digits. Ja really wasn't getting going. You could see how thin the Grizzlies were. They, you know, if they had their full complement of guys to rotate, I really think they could win the title. And I think they could still, but now we're going to talk about how they're probably done. And this could be a quick series because of the jaw injury. But, you know, Memphis is really good and they withstood some punches and they had a great second quarter rally. Shots were starting to fall. Desmond Bane got going in the middle stage of the game. Jaren Jackson Jr., good Lord. He was incredible. He was incredible in the entire first half. Eventually, they stopped getting the piss kicked out of him on the boards, and Jaren was awesome. Jaren Jackson, he had a game last year against the Warriors. I think it was game one where he had 30-plus. He was great that night. This was the best I've ever seen him go. But I noted this in the first half was bench scoring. Like, the Lakers bench was really doing a good job. They had to also because LeBron was kind of in and out. This is the ultimate D'Angelo Russell game. He was fucking horrendous in the first half, but ended up hitting big shots and had himself a pretty solid night overall. When you actually look at the counting stats and the scoring, Russell played well. He had a much better second half than the first half. I was texting Danny, like, the first two plays of the game, Russell comes down, pulls up for a three that's unnecessary. Next possession, they get a steal. He's off and running. He could have hit LeBron on the drive on the wing, but instead he took it himself and missed a jumper. He also had a couple moments where, like, he tried to come down the floor and, like, all right, my time. I'm going to go one-on-one with Ja. You know, when Ja scored, he scored, then Ja scored. He came back down with a shot. Then the next possession, he fucking throws a full-court pass to LeBron and throws it into the eighth row. Like, there were some bad D'Lo stretches in this game, and he made me want to pull the hair that I don't have out of my head. But he made big shots in the second half, especially when they were trying to stem some tides in the third quarter. I do think D'Lo hit some key jump shots to really start to get the shots to fall. And Schroeder was in foul trouble, but Hachimura was big. You know, the bench did a good job to really help in spots in this game. Darvin Ham, I thought, did a really good job managing that tonight as well. And I thought that we found out Jared Vanderbilt actually can be, in a series like this, a key contributor, because I thought he did a pretty solid job on John Morant. Now with Ja out, potentially for the rest of the series, we'll get to that. I don't know exactly where you use Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt, you know, once Ja got hurt, Darvin tried to get cute and he put Vanderbilt on Jackson. When AD did a fine job on Jackson in the second half, and Jackson scored on two straight possessions and helped out on another. So I don't know where putting him on Tyus Jones seems a bit much. Maybe put him on Bane, but I'm interested to see how they're going to utilize Vanderbilt on the defensive end. I thought he was very solid today. But the bench scoring, I thought, because the Grizzlies really – now, Tyus Jones can score, but he's more of a facilitator. Luke Kennard is probably their best three-point scorer, or their best bench scorer. But outside of that, they just don't have the depth that the Lakers do, and I thought that showed in the first half. In the run that they went on to get back into the game, I thought it was a couple stretches of really bad minutes from LeBron, turnovers-wise. I thought he just made a couple dumb mistakes, and it led to some moments for Memphis. But in the third quarter, they started to get going. They started hitting some shots. Hachimura hit three straight threes at one point. We're going to get to him here now. And then, you know, this is what I was getting at last week when I was talking about the kind of the best closing lineup. Now, today they were able to go with D'Angelo because, I mean, D'Angelo did enough on the offensive end to warrant. You know, it's more going to depend night to night for D'Angelo Russell whether or not the offense is there. Because when he's shooting bad, and I thought, like I said, last week against the Wolves, I thought Darvin Ham did a good job of saving D'Lo from himself in a sense by benching him when he was shot 1-for-9. Tonight, in the first half, he had some dumb moments, but in the second half, he did have it going. He was playing well in the pick and roll, I thought, with Davis and LeBron. And then he was able to get out of the way and let other guys close the game, like Rui and Austin Reeves, as wild as that sounds. But what I meant to get to was he closed last week with Rui Hachimura in the end of the game and in overtime against the Wolves, and I thought that was really nice because You know, he can hold up enough defensively. He's not a big-time three-point shooter, but he can stretch the floor. And he stretched the floor tonight, and he hit 5 of 6 threes, and he shot 11 of 14 from the field. And now, listen, are you going to get another Hachimura game like that in this series? Probably not. But the way Memphis is going to utilize their front court, whether it's Tillman and Jackson, you know, they don't have many options. They're going to probably continue to, especially with Ja probably out now, they're in just a weird, weird spot. You know, that's a matchup that the Lakers can take advantage of. And Hachimura was able to hit shots. Now, again, I don't think you can rely on him to hit five threes. He probably won't hit five threes again in a game in the playoffs. But this is the thing with the Lakers, why I'm confident that they can make the finals. And I know I'm not picking them to, because if you watched or listened on Thursday, I picked the Celtics to beat them in the finals to win the title. But the Lakers can win the championship. It's because they have options, because this team is deep. People want to shortchange it and look at, oh, they're the seventh seed and blah, blah, blah. They were the best team in the league since the trade deadline. They have a roster that completely doesn't count to when you really want to look at full length, the stats. You have to look at it in a nutshell. The Grizzlies and the Lakers are two of the four best teams in the league right now. Two of the five best teams in the league, right? Six. Two of the six best teams in the league right now. Them, those two, and Phoenix, and then the top three dogs in the East probably were the six best teams in the league to close the year. You know? It just so happened that they're playing in round one, and now it looks like Memphis is going to be in trouble without Ja. And I really think the Lakers, if Ja's not out, I think the Grizzlies can get a game maybe. But goddamn, the Lakers are going to feel good. Now we get to Austin Reeves. He has been a revelation. Not that, you know, it's not like we didn't expect the white guy to be good in the league or be a big performer. But listen, he's their third best player. He is. Let's just get it right. They went to him to close in this game, and he was controlling pick and roll. He made good decisions. They could not stop him. Like, that's what he is, and he showed that all year, and he showed a bit of it last year. And you look at things like their foul disparity and whatnot. He's a huge part of it. He lived at the line in the second half of the season. Reeves is a fantastic player. He is their third best guy, and I know you can't count on Hachimura to score like that again, but you can expect Reeves to be in that vicinity. The majority of his damage came late. If he has just a regular game where it's spread all out, he'll get to 18 to 22. That's what he's done for 2 months. He is awesome. Reeves is amazing. Reeves is great. And the thing that gives me so much confidence in the Lakers, they won a fucking road playoff game. And LeBron was their fifth best player. Davis was the best. We've gone all this time. We haven't mentioned how amazing Davis was, by the way. 22 points, 12 boards, 3 assists, and then he had 6 blocks, 3 steals. He was amazing. Davis was top 5 player alive. Good. Davis was their best player. Then Hachimura, Reeves, Russell, James. Like, that's just... That was the pecking order tonight, to a degree. And the Lakers won a road playoff game. That in itself, batshit. And that's the formula now. People lose their minds when... Like, I don't really think the Lakers... Obviously, if your skeptic reason is health, I get it. But if you just look at it as a everyone's going to stay healthy thing, the Lakers absolutely... They're the best team. They're the best team in the West. They just are. They just are. And today helped prove that. All right, moving on. Talk about weird games. What a night for Russell Westbrook. What a game in general. The Clippers beat the Suns 115-110. And Russell Westbrook is really, is he the main reason? No. But I've never seen Russ play a game this good in about 7 or 8 years. And he shot 3 for 19. But the intensity that he played, he showed on the defensive end late in that game, was phenomenal. His aggressiveness on the glass. There was a part in that game when it felt like it was getting away from the Clippers. But what the, you know, what the Clippers were able to do was just lock down. They started guarding again. And listen, I didn't understand the Westbrook thing at the time. I didn't understand breaking the mojo up. But now without Chris Paul, he does have moments where he plays within himself a little bit more, but he's always going to be, fuck it, I'm the best guy alive mode. And he at times he had that tonight. But I've never seen him that locked in. I've never seen him care that much on the defensive side of the floor. And it was special. I've been so up and down with him in his entire career. And honestly, I have to say, I'm so fucking happy for him. I really am. He looks genuinely happy on a team for the first time in a while. And I thought he was great. They do not, as crazy as he shot 3 for 19, and they don't win that game without him. They don't. It's nuts. Let's talk now about Kawhi. The quietest 38 you'll ever see. I mean, the motherfucker dominates, man. Look at what he did when the last time he played in the playoffs. This is exactly why I was so, like, I'm listening to people talk about this series and it spilled into my feelings and narrative on it. I'm just thinking, like, all right, man, I get it. Paul George is out, but they got depth, they can guard, and they got this dude. They've got Robo MJ. He's a killer. He's a goddamn killer. He went at them all night. And, oh my God, 25 in the second half. And, again, when it felt like the game was getting away from them, they rallied the troops. We've seen them fold. We have seen this team fold. But now, granted, let's be real. They didn't fold again. The fold was they folded in the bubble. But against the Suns, they didn't fold. They played their ass off against Phoenix in 2021. Last year, they just had fucking terrible luck. Kawhi banged up all year, never came back. Paul George playing then out, then plays, then misses the 8-9 play-in game. Just terrible luck. And this year, I thought they've competed all season long. There was moments where they could have kind of folded and kicked the curb down, like, God damn it, here we go again. But things have, like, it was starting to go bad for them. Shit was going south, and they rallied and played well, and Kawhi was really, really good. I thought the moments of the game for this one really is the – I'm pulling it up play-by-play here – it's 100-99, and the Clippers have the ball, and they turn it over. And after we go about a minute or so where no one scores, but then the Clippers on offense, three-pointer from Kawhi on a Russ assist. Next possession, 106-101, three-pointer from Kawhi. Possession after that, 109-103 or 106-103, three-pointer from Eric Gordon. Now, these are all to all answer shots from the Suns, but at the end, you know, that was a huge moment for them because it stretched the lead out. They were able to hit some big-time shots to answer. Ayton hit a pair of mid-range Jays, and then Durant hit a nasty shot off a side out. The game, it got down to two, or got down to one, and then the possession of the game is Chris Paul hits two free throws with 1:08 left. The Clippers miss a shot with 57 seconds left. Russ gets an offensive rebound. Ball went out of bounds, I think. Or no, he pulls it out, kicks it to Terrence Mann. He misses the three. Russ then again comes in and knocks the ball up, and it goes off of Ayton, off of Westbrook, but on the ground, it hits Torrey Craig's foot and spits out. So that's two straight. That's twice Russ has added to the possession. Timeout Clippers. Then Russ misses a 30, left wing three. And then Zubac was in there battling. Zubac played well tonight, too. Goes out of bounds again. They get it in after a timeout. And Russ gets fouled. But not only that, he goes to the line and fucking hits both free throws. That took, 51 seconds off the clock. Suns get it back. They can't get it in on the side out and have to burn their last timeout. Devin Booker drives, goes up, gets blocked by who else? Fucking Russell Westbrook. And, they get it to Eric Gordon. Free throws, game is history. Westbrook was great. He was great in the game. He found a way to impact it without hitting shots. And as much of the triple-double stuff and the counting stats games that he's had in his career, I don't think we've been able to say that in a playoff game where he was able to impact the game this much in a win while playing as bad as he kind of did on the offensive end in quite some time, and that's what impresses me the most. For the Suns, I don't think this is anything you kind of lose your shit about. Their process was fine, but their depth, man, tonight showed just like, God, I'm okay with just being like, yeah, it's going to be tough for them to win the title this year is their depth. And I don't think people should lose. I don't think this should be some sort of, you know, narrative based, oh my God, how this team didn't win the title thing. Their depth is terrible. Now, Torrey Craig played really well tonight, but their bench got fucking slaughtered in minutes. In their minutes tonight, it's insane. Let me pull it up here. Their bench, you got 24 minutes from Landry Shamet, but outside of that, I mean, it's a mess. And they're all negatives too, by the way. It's disgusting. Oh my God. 24 minutes from Landry Shamet, minus 14. Jack Lawndale, 8 minutes, minus 8. Bismack Biyombo, 5 minutes, minus 11. Okogie and Wainwright, 7 minutes each, minus 22 combined. I'm not the biggest plus-minus guy in the world, but sometimes it makes sense how you get there. And God damn, like 43 minutes for Booker, 39 for Paul, 45 for Durant. 27 for Craig. Now, here's the thing for Durant. I thought this was the best I actually have ever seen Durant. Now, I know he had the 49, 17, and 10 game against the Nets, which is still the greatest game of his career, but in a game where the shots, he wasn't shooting, but distributing, I thought this was the best I'd ever seen him do that without actually shooting. He was great at getting guys going. I thought Devin Booker also played the best game of his life defensively, and offensively he was fine. I think you'll see Durant maybe be more of a focal point in game two. But in fairness, like, they've just got the bodies to throw at him a bunch to where you're going to want to get him. Like, you're trying to get to Paul and Craig, who are going to be left more in open. Paul didn't shoot well tonight. He shot 2 of 8. But granted, he did have 11 boards and 10 assists, so the counting stats were there. And again, I thought Phoenix did a really good job of moving the ball to get other guys' looks, but Jesus, man. And I thought they did a really good job, too, of giving Ayton opportunities, like, how they were playing him. And as good as I thought Zubac played tonight, I thought he was really, really good, but I thought Ayton played well with, there's just not much Zubac could do to cover Ayton the way that they were utilizing him in the pick and roll. They'd hit him in the short roll, and he was really, really cooking from that 15-footer, kind of like how you see Joel Embiid do it, but obviously Joel shoots that way more than Ayton does, so that's how you get that gap and whatnot. But I thought Ayton was fine. It's not the only thing again for the Suns tonight that I would like to see Chris Paul shoot more. But I thought again they did a really good job of, they didn't force anything, and I thought their offense was really smooth to get him back in the game and get him a lead. I thought they were going to run away and hide, which is, again, why you got to give the Clippers an insane amount of credit for not folding. Like, you really do. Because this game could have gotten away from them, but they just held in. Eric Gordon came in the third and hit fucking a couple huge-ass shots to keep them going. Here's the one thing for the Suns that was a little, the worst thing for the Suns is their fucking bench was slaughtered. It was insanely slaughtered. Now, here is something I'm interested in seeing from the Suns in the next game, maybe their clutch offense, which is what made me feel really good about them watching them in the short amount of times the games they had. It still was, you know, what really drove this team last year was their clutch offense. They just net with the amount of guys they had even last year. You're never going to get bad shots in the final 5 minutes of a game. Tonight, they just didn't hit as many of them, you know? I guess you can also say, though, really, LA hit more. Like I said, the biggest offensive run in that last few minutes was it was 9-6, but it was trading twos for threes. Two threes from Kawhi and then the three from Eric Gordon. Like, those are big baskets. One of the interesting things Ty Lue said was early in the game, what he felt helped them was the different type of looks they threw at the Suns defensively because of how they haven't played many games together, so they haven't really seen many different things. I thought that was very interesting from Lue. I'm going to be interested to see how long he can maybe wrinkle some stuff up. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get a word from Kavanaugh's, and we're going to get a word from our boys at Card Subject to Change. And we'll come back. We're going to talk Saturday night where the beam was fucking lit in Sacramento.
Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island.
Card Subject to Change is looking for dedicated sponsors. If you or your business would like to join the Card Subject to Change podcast, hit us up at our official podcast email, cstcpodcast2022@gmail.com.
All right, let's talk the game of the fucking weekend. The Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. The final 16, 18 minutes of this game was just pure euphoricness, if that's a word. The final 12 minutes was just, dude, two teams throwing bombs. And listen, if you haven't watched the Kings all year, go back, watch highlights. If you DVR'd it, go watch the full game. This is what the Kings are. They had a slow stretch in the middle of the game, and the offense is just great. And there were some things that were shocking to me that they just decided to do, but it worked. All right, let's talk about some important stuff in the second half. So, well, first half, Golden State, they kind of went back and forth. The Warriors had a pretty good end of the first half that gave them a little bit of a cushion, and then they were just able to get a couple baskets. It got it up to, I think, 10 at one point. And then in the first half, Fox did not play well shooting-wise. Domantas Sabonis in the entire game did not play well. And they did an interesting thing of how they were covering him. Basically, they put Draymond on him, and when he had the ball outside of 15 feet, they just sagged off of him. They played him down in the paint. It was very, very interesting. And now I'm going to be interested to see how the Kings adjust to that, and we'll get to that more here. We'll get to that more here at the end, some adjustments. But in the second half, De'Aaron Fox really started to get going. I think there was a point where he had 8 or 10 points in a row, and He was starting to get going downhill, hitting some shots in the mid-range. He's so good at driving and stopping on a dime at the free throw line or the elbow, and then from there making another move or two, getting to his little push shot or just getting that short little fadeaway 10-12 footer. Like, that's his game. He's really, really good at that. It's like an amplified version of Jimmy Butler's mid-post game. It's just because he's so fast. He's so fucking fast, and his body control is great. It's amazing. Something I was really impressed with was Fox didn't really have anybody pulling the weight with him in the third quarter until Trey Lyles got going. Now, the bench for the Kings, in opposite of the Suns, for the Kings, the bench was pretty damn good. All four guys that came off the bench were plus. Monk, Mitchell, Len, Lyles, all pluses. Monk was plus 10. We'll get to him in a moment. Alex Len had 13 solid minutes, and I thought they did a good job of kind of spelling intermittent moments with Sabonis coming out. Then they'd either play Lyles and Len together, or they would just put Lyles at the five and kind of do some stuff there, play some small ball action. I was really impressed with how they interjected their offense and their ways with DeMontis just having himself a tough night on the offensive end. And again, we'll get to some adjustments that I think could help the Kings here momentarily. For the Warriors, it really is just they got fucking destroyed in the non-Curry minutes. That's really what it was. That's going to be a huge thing, is when does it come to a point where Curry plays 45 a night? Because they couldn't survive when he sat in this game, just because of how fucking insane the offense moves when he's out there. Now, some interesting things that happened in the fourth quarter. Mike Brown talked in the between quarters was how, as crazy as the pace already was, he was saying how he thought they should have been playing faster. Now, this is something the Kings do. Their offense is, the most efficient and insanely highest rated offense in league history. It's not by accident. It's because the pace they play at. And what I liked to see from Sacramento was they weren't afraid of the moment. They weren't afraid of the team across from them. Just because this is their first time in the playoffs, just because, it's close, just because they're playing the defending champs, the dynasty of this era, they didn't give a shit. And they played their fucking game. They did. They were running. Like, the Kings were running and dribble driving. One of the stuff we worry about the Warriors is their defense compared to the two non-Durant titles. What's the one commonality between them? Yes, the offense is great. Curry is fucking sensational. But their defenses in 2015 and 2022 were number one in the league. This year was 19th. They were not a good defensive team. Even in the 27 games, that five-man lineup that everyone gushes about, Wiggins, Dre, Looney, Curry, Thompson, like, they still were 14-13 in those games. They just can't stop at the point of attack anymore. And Fox, Monk, who was incredible, by the way. Monk, 30 points? 32 points, 8 of 13 shooting. His aggressiveness to drive. He got to the line, shot 14 free throws. Those were all huge. Because he was able to really keep them alive in the first half with Sabonis shooting bad and Fox not getting anything to fall. The Monk in the first half really is, when you think about it, what helped them win the game. And he was able to hit some shots in the third and the fourth. Down the stretch, it was really all Fox and Monk in the fourth quarter. The transition and the dribble driving at the point of attack of the Warriors defense is what I've been saying all year, what I've been worried about with the Warriors. And it's why I picked against them in this series. It's why I don't think they can win a title. And then at the end of the day, this is the coronation of De'Aaron Fox. Of this game just shows it's validation for people like me who put him on first team. It's validation for this King season so far. I know it's one game, but just it's a reminder to the casual that probably last night was the first time a lot of people saw the Sacramento Kings, and De'Aaron Fox was great. And he's had a weird NBA career up to the time they traded Halliburton for Sabonis. But he's been so dialed in, and he's been so amazing. He literally was last year like the worst clutch player in the league. And now there is nobody that fucking comes close to the stratosphere that he's on in the clutch. He's so good late in games. It's insane. He is truly amazing. He really is. First name De'Aaron, last name him, man. Shout out to D-Fox. Shout out to the Kings. Light the beam. Onwards to game 2 tomorrow. I can't wait. Now, adjustments. I'm going to be interested to see if the Warriors continue to play so far off of Sabonis. Do the Kings try to adjust to get, you know, some dribble handoff stuff to get guys to walk into easy shots? We'll see. Now, the thing is, you have Draymond doing it, so you can trust him to be quick. And now, even like, look, the Warriors defense is bad, but Draymond is still an elite defender. So you can still, he can make up for some bad moments and he can get away with some shit. So it'll be interesting to see how they adjust, how the Kings try to adjust. If, you know, when Sabonis has the ball at the top of the key, they're really just, you know, they're not guarding him like that. It kind of threw him out of his game. So I'm interested to see how Mike Brown adjusts to that. Moving on, Cavs and Knicks. A game one, I thought in the, you know, this game really showed, again, we've talked about depth, and I really, not that I undersold the Knicks, but maybe I just didn't expect that to be as big of a factor. They're rolling off guys off the bench that the Cavs just don't have, and it was a lot of Chetty Osman getting fucking picked out of a lineup and cooked by Jalen Brunson in the second half, and especially in the fourth quarter. And the Cavs just couldn't get out of the gate, man. They just couldn't. And they don't have the guys to really – they don't have the guys at the wing. That's really the problem. And all of those guys are kind of defensive liabilities, except for Okoro. I can't believe he didn't play late. But at the end of the day, shot 1-6, so I get it to a degree. Garland – like, I saw a stat that Garland – guys that Garland was hitting shot 1-14. So that wasn't good. This was a weirdly played game offensively for both teams. Neither team could shoot well. The Knicks shot 8-29 from 3. The Cavs shot 10-31. Jalen Brunson got going in the second half. Randall had almost all of his production in the first half, but I thought Julius, who I didn't expect to play in this first few games, he was really good in the first half because Brunson got into foul trouble, and I thought he did a good job of kind of – like, talk about stemming tides. I thought he did a good job of just holding it down and helping them get the lead. Quickly did a good job coming in. Josh Hart in the second half. He was really, really good. But other guys just chipping in here and there, and their defense was really good. This was a slugfest. I thought, like, you know, kind of X's and O's stuff. I thought the Knicks did a great job of blitzing pick and rolls with whether it was Mitchell or Garland, just because they did not respect the other guys out there that were not, you know, the shooters at least, because Mobley isn't a shooter and Allen is obviously sitting underneath. So whether it was Osman, whether it was Caris LeVert, who was fucking horrendous, whether it was Isaac Okoro, they just weren't respecting those guys, Ricky Rubio. They were blitzing Mitchell and Garland, forcing them to give the ball up at times. And then from there, guys that were open couldn't hit shots. And that was really the biggest. That's where the Cavs have to upgrade next year to really, really be a title contender. And then in the second half, as we said, Jalen Brunson was very effective in the mid post, with his ball movement, whether it was getting inside and shooting or getting inside and getting the ball spinning around the arc to create matchups. I thought Jalen Brunson was sensational in the second half, and that's what helped lead them to a win. Other quick notes from around these games. I thought Heat beat the Bucks, so we have the 8 seed go up on the 1. They won by 13. No Giannis. Bad shooting night from the Bucks. This game was winnable for Milwaukee even without Giannis, but they shot 11-45 from 3. And when Miami hit shots, they're going to win. That's the thing. They're good enough in other areas to where all they need to do is actually have the ball go through the net. and they hit 15 of 25 from three. Vincent was 4 of 5. Hero and Struess were 2 of 4. Kevin Love off the bench, 4 of 7 from three. Caleb Martin had 15 points off the bench. And of course, Jimmy was awesome, 35, 11, and 5. And without Giannis, who only played 11 minutes, I mean, the question's going to be, you know, how bad is he hurt? It was a back thing. We'll see. I think they're fine still, but man, it's some weird moments. But positives. Chris Middleton, I thought, played really well. 33 points, 12 of 20 shooting. Didn't shoot well from outside. Holiday didn't shoot well from outside either. But, you know, Grayson Allen, 2 of 4 from 3. Crowder and Portis, 0 of 9 from 3 combined. Wes Matthews and Joe Ingles, 5 of 11 from 3. Like, those are just things that they just couldn't hit some open shots. If they would have, they probably would have won still. But they were missing open shots, and Miami was hitting them. I think that's just a recipe for disaster. Now the question is going to be, how long is Giannis going to be out? Another thing, Tyler Hero broke his hand in a pretty dumb basketball move too, like the old fake hustle. He was trying to dive for a ball that he had no business going after, and he fucking broke his hand. And I love Tyler Hero, but oh, that was a dumb moment from him. And he's done for the postseason, no matter how long that's going. Just a horrendous, horrendous idea. And they lose one of their starters. So that's not good for them. Now the question is going to be, how long is Giannis out for? If Giannis comes back, they have enough firepower to, well, they'll win this 5 or 6. But congrats on Milwaukee for making this, or from on Miami for making this a little more sweaty than it should be. I'm not worried until potentially Giannis is out for more than a game, Miami wins the game when he plays more than 10 minutes. So we'll see. We'll be very interested to see how that works. All right, let's move on to some other games. Sixers, Nets. I'm very intrigued. My only real note from this, I'm really intrigued. I'm really happy that Harden was back kind of to his old self. He looked like he had more pep in his step. The shots obviously falling kind of helps a lot, but just his ability to get going and move the rock and be able to just have that spring in his game that he hadn't had for the last month, I thought was really good to see. And I just think they're just too much for Brooklyn. And I thought they did a good job of attacking double teams, and they were able to hit shots. And the main thing for me in that game was that Philly and Harden. Harden just looked really good. Boston dominated. I think this is an ass-beating series. I know Atlanta had moments where they closed into the game. The Boston only scored 38 in the second half. They were sleepwalking. They were fucking 30 at halftime. Jason and Jaylen were dominant. Derek White, man, you know, I was reminded in that first half why I picked them to win the title. Derek White has been so good this year. His confidence, his decision-making has been really good. And Robert Williams, you know, just the impact that he makes in small sample sizes is so good on both ends of the floor. He gives them a dynamic that nobody else on the team has with the offensive end, with the rim running and the offensive rebounding. And the defensive end, he's the ultimate eraser. And I think personally their best lineups are going to – well, their best lineup in general is the Jays, Smart, White, and then Horford. You know, I think you could even take out Smart. Yes, I said Smart, and then go Williams in there, go big. It's kind of the same as last year's best lineup. You're just switching White and Smart because White's been their third best guy all year. I really like what Boston brings, and I thought that was just dominant. Outside of that, did I hit every game? We had all four of them. And yeah, the only other game, which is the one game I really didn't pay attention to, Nuggets Wolves. The Nuggets at one point were up 30. Yeah, man. GG's. I don't know how the Wolves, like, I don't know what, we'll see. Maybe they'll make it interesting. I don't know. That's like kind of the series I least give a shit about to a degree. Regardless, fun weekend in hoops, man. I was excited. I was enjoying myself. I thought it was a great, great 2 days. Tomorrow night, Sixers Nets, which is eh. But Kings Warriors at 9. Stanley Cup playoffs start tomorrow, which that'll be fun. All in all, we're back, man. We are back. All right. We'll see you guys Wednesday. Regardless, either if it's a new episode of the show or if it's the live mock draft, we're going to see you guys Wednesday regardless. This has been the Educated in Ignorance podcast. I'm Joe the Show Winkle, as always. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. If you remember, if you ain't got your game, you best pass the sticks. Until next time, we'll see you guys Wednesday for the mock draft show. Thank you again for tuning us in. Follow us on TikTok or Fantasy Sick QC. That'll do it. We are out. See you Wednesday, guys. Peace.